Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
The weekly gathering place for over 1 million freedom-loving gun owners. The most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Only God knows why.
I don't know. We have a full studio again this week.
Yes, we do.
Alexander Rubian from NJ2AS, a.k.a. RecallSweeney.com. RecallSweeney.com in the house.
It's a nice new name, Alexander.
Yeah, I love it.
And a guest who hasn't been on in a long time.
Oh, yeah, one of our
Daniel Schmutter, Esquire. And welcome, Dan.
Thank you.
I didn't say welcome, Alexander, because I'm pissed at him right now, but we'll get into that later.
So a civil rights attorney and a civil rights violation,
correct,
both sitting in
now,
the same studio.
For people who haven't listened for a long time or are new listeners, Dan has been working behind enemy lines and forward of enemy lines since the beginning with two-way stuff in his law career, and he was involved in McDonald or Heller? McDonald.
Both.
Okay, you wrote briefs for JPFO, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Friend of the court briefs?
Yep. Or,
okay. So he's been around. He's also been entwined with NJ2AS. He's also helped with Operation Strike Force. He's also helped Alexander here, NJ2AS stuff. Dan is one of those go-to guys like we are, everybody in this room, that there's something going on with 2A. We need to fight. He fights with us,
yeah.
Okay? Remember being down in Trenton that day when we found out that our case wasn't going to be heard?
I do.
We were sitting in Rob Nixon's office, our lobbyist. I'll never forget that day. But anyway, what case was that?
That was Drake.
Drake. We found out Drake was not going to be heard. The New Jersey Supreme Court decided not to hear it. Or was it the U.S. Supreme Court?
U.S.
Supreme Court decided not to hear it. So I'll never forget that. It's like I remember where I was when the Challenger blew up. And, you know, you remember certain things in your life. And forget that. I'll never forget when I met you. We were at a vegan place. And I tried to order the cat on a stick. And then I found out later it was tofu on a kebab. But anyway, it was pretty good. You put enough spice on shit. Who cares? So, a couple of things. Alexander, you're here. We need updates on RecallSweeney.com.
Yes.
Dan, you can chime in anytime you want. I know you've been helping Alexander with advice, so a big shout out. Dan, you're at a new firm, by the way. What firm are you at?
That's right. I've recently moved to a firm called Hartman & Winicky. We're in Paramus and Ridgewood. And I invite your listeners to go check out our website at www.hartmanwinicky.com. That's HartmanWinicky.com.
And Hartman and Winicky, Bergen County, obviously, but they practice all over New Jersey, obviously. Any problems, permitting problems, anything else like that, please reach out to Dan. He's one of the good guys, and you've risked a lot and taken a lot of chances. And we've all sacrificed. How much time have you sacrificed to be away from your family for this stuff? We've all done it, you know?
It takes a lot.
We all have giant signs that say pro bono that we throw darts at.
You know, it's funny, though, but if you look at the group of people, like the 50 people in the state that do the heavy lifting for the 1 million gun owners.
Yeah.
It's basically about 50 people.
Yeah.
You know, from Scott Bach to Dan to Evan to Alexander to us to Willett and a few other
activists. And everybody sits
activists
on their ass and enjoys the benefits.
We have a few thousand beneath that that will activate for us. You know, we do a Recall Sweeney event, we get 400 people show up.
Yeah.
So we have a few thousand that will do it. We want to get 1,500, 2,000 people to Trenton for a rally, we can do that. But the problem is the other 900,000, 800, you know.
Look at the 5,000 members of Central Jersey Rifle and Pistol Club. Try to motivate them to do anything.
Yeah, I went to one of their meetings, actually. And
there was burning brands and throw
you out.
There
was about 500 people there, easily.
Oh, easily.
I'm like, if every one of you got up and did some form of activism, we would turn over the state.
Well, they're interested in the coffee and the donuts in the back of the room.
Yeah, the coffee and the donuts in the back of the room. And, you know, like, it's just this very pacifist mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Just like,
well, you see that happen all the time in New Jersey. But, I think we're inculcated.
What was that word?
We've trained up mentally to think about this thing. Where We look at firearms as being odd and different and weird. I mean, before I met him, I was thinking about this morning. Actually, I had a discussion over at an unrelated meeting this morning about showing up. It was with a video production crew that I worked with down in Florida. And I remember the guy who was the main subject in this video driving to the venue with him. He's an ex-CIA guy, and he's a preacher now in Florida. We get out of the car, and we have to go into this venue. And he says, oh, wait, I have to go back to the car. Turns around, takes out a Glock 19 and puts it into the glove compartment. We stood there with our mouths open because we're all from Jersey.
Yeah.
Now, this is 2 years before I met him. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy's a psychopath. Why has he got a gun? So I've come from that to here because of being educated. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of what is the problem in New Jersey is we've been held down so long that we've been educated toward the anti-gun side so much. It's so odd to see someone with a firearm.
Yeah.
That right away he's a bad guy. He's a crazoid.
So, Dan, what do you think that our First Amendment rights were stripped away at Sweeney's Town where we're not allowed to protest anymore?
Yeah, it's very suspicious. I mean,
good choice of words.
Can you imagine like the timing? I mean, what are the chances of that?
What are the chances?
Let me ask you something, Dan. If people moved in across the street from you and set up a band on their lawn every night from 6 to 11 p.m., and you didn't want it, and you wanted to get an ordinance passed that it was like 10 o'clock curfew, how long would it take to go through the process of a town the size of Sweeney's? 2 years?
More than a weekend.
Yeah, it would take quite a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are your odds of getting something like that passed? Okay.
Me not at all.
You got a better shot of getting struck by lightning. All right?
Twice.
The judge would probably say something like, here's some earplugs. Okay. Yeah. $20.
But I mean, wow. Talk about fast track.
Oh, sure.
Holy
18 days was it?
18 days.
Boom.
18
boom.
Days.
Done.
And of course, the ACLU doesn't have any money to help us. They're advising Alexander, right?
Yeah, they actually have been reaching out. Their lawyers have been sending me a lot of information. Dan and I were talking.
Even though guns are involved?
Yeah, surprisingly, they were very receptive. The guy even, the lawyer, their lead attorney for New Jersey was telling me like how he just thought it was disgusting what the South Jersey Editorial Times was writing about how they wish Sweeney would have pounded my face into the concrete. And can you believe the stuff that they're actually saying?
And in the newspaper.
Paper.
This is incredible.
Like, just call it the Sweeney Times. Like, might as well.
But you know, the ACLU has to look at this and they have to say, we have to throw some support behind this because a First Amendment violation is a First Amendment violation First Amendment violation.
That's how it should be.
If you're going to defend pornographers.
Right.
And right. child molesters, right. then you have right. to defend people that are lawfully protesting because of a gun law or because a woman was slaughtered in her driveway by her ex-boyfriend.
Because of this man, Stephen Sweeney, not allowing his woman to protect herself.
Right.
You know,
Well, not him specifically, but him and his ilk and the things that he does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he leads the legislature that causes these laws to be churned out like
he decides what bills get put up for vote as a Senate president.
Absolutely.
He gets to hold everything.
Yep.
And he decides what goes and what doesn't go.
Yes, this goes into the pile.
So he is ultimately responsible.
Yes.
Ultimately responsible. Yes. Talk about ultimate responsibility. We're going to get back into recallsweeney.com, but did anybody see the video of Christie losing it in Idaho?
Iowa.
You didn't guys see it?
No,
a real two-way advocate started questioning him on his results.
Really?
On his votes, and then went back 20 years when he was running for AG, where he said we should ban assault rifles. What? You didn't make decisions 20 years ago that you're not against. I'm going to lose my temper and bully. Yeah, he lost it again.
It's hilarious.
That's great.
I anybody who listens to our show in any of the caucus states where they have the early polling, go on, do your research about Christie, and get to those public venues and ask him those same questions,
absolutely.
Okay? A vein will blow up in his head
right.
because he wants to look like he's pro-gun. So he's blaming the legislature. Meanwhile, people have listed like the 40 things he could have done.
His two appointees as AGs.
Are anti-gun.
Are anti-gun. Yeah.
But there's about 40 things he could have done by executive fiat. Right, Dan?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, he could have signed. He could have sent letters to the state police. police about governor. The permitting process.
Yeah, there are things you could do through the Attorney General's office and the state police that could make things better for us.
I mean, and it wouldn't cost him anything, and it wouldn't hurt him, and he has a way of selling himself.
He could do an Obama
in
New Jersey.
When the anti-gunners attack him in the state, he could say, listen, this is just a paperwork problem that only affects law-abiding citizens. I sent a directive to the state police and all the municipalities in the town that they should adhere to the 30 days. No biggie, okay? Right. He can have his AG sign one letter allowing our retired cops to carry hollow point bullets like 49 other states. Okay? One signature by his AG is all that the state police require. That and about 38 other things that he could have done.
Yeah, defining
and he hasn't done them. He's a failure when it comes to it. Yeah. I know his end game. He wants to be Attorney General. He's going to make noise as long as he can.
I agree.
Then he's going to drop out and he's going to support whoever is the head person, let's say it's Bush or whatever, and say, listen, I'm going to throw my weight behind you and my votes behind you. And I want to be the AG because he can never be vice president because he can't be second fiddle.
Right.
I got to be quite honest with you.
It's too much
hubris. I'm a Christie critic with a lot of stuff. He'd be a good AG.
Oh, he would be.
He put more lawmakers away when he was the New Jersey Attorney General than any other Attorney General before because he's loyal to no one. He'd be a great AG. I'm telling you right now. He'd have all the politicians. He'd put them, lock them all up. He'd be down in D.C. There'd be paddy wagons every day pulling them out.
All right, we're coming back.
For over 20 years, attorney Evan Knappen has seen what rotten laws do to good people. That's why he's dedicated his life to fighting for the rights of New Jersey gun owners. A fearsome courtroom litigator, one of the first lawyers to ever get a federal injunction against the state gun law. An unrelenting gun rights spokesman, tearing away at the anti-gun propaganda to expose the truth. Author of 5 best-selling books on gun rights, including Knappen on New Jersey Gun Law. The bright orange gun law Bible that sits atop the desk of virtually every lawyer, police chief, firearms dealer, and savvy gun owner in New Jersey. That's what's made Evan Knappen New Jersey's gun lawyer. New Jersey gun laws are designed to make you a criminal. Don't become the victim of New Jersey's vicious anti-gun legal system. This is the guy you want on your side. Keep his name and phone number on a post-it note attached to your New Jersey firearms ID card in your wallet and hope you'll never have to use it. But if you live, work, or travel through New Jersey with a firearm, the deck is already stacked against you. Keep his number with you always. You can find him on the web at evannappen.com or take the link from the Gun for Hire radio resource page. Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer.
Becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed.
And what better way to say I love you than giving the ones you love a gift to keep them safe? Lipstick Bodyguard. It looks just like a beautiful little lipstick, but just like a beautiful woman, it has the power to bring a grown man to his knees.
Lipstick Bodyguard. Fear no evil. Get yours today only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
And this segment is brought to you Waldorf by Chiropractic.com. WALDORFCHIRO.com. Waldorf Chiropractic is located in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Dr. Eric is a strong 2A supporter. He published his own book, Yes, Chiropractic Can Help You. If you or anyone you know lives within 30-mile radius of Bridgewater, New Jersey, please check out Waldorf Chiropractic. If not, please share with friends and family. Support those who support us. Speaking of support, the Spartan race is September 13th. Team Gun for Hire, no shame, 108 runners and attendees. Sandy Muldoon and Matt are waiting for shirt sizes for like 20 more people. Please email Spartan at Gun for Hire, Spartan at gunforhire.com with your shirt size. If we don't get your shirt size by next week, we will be ordering 30 size small girls' belly shirts, and the back of the shirt will say Anthony's bitch on it. And that's what you're going to have to wear for the 8-mile beast race. So Get over it. All right, recallsweeney.com. I just want to clarify a few things. Dan Schmutter, Esquire, is here. He's been advising Alexander on our First Amendment violations, by the way, with the protesting with the in front of Sweeney's house. But, Alexander, let's go. We need to call of action, where to go, what to do, how's it going, what do we need to do now?
Hit Absolutely. It's been a crazy month, guys. We've been putting together a lot of data. We had a second call day of action. I'm sorry. That we were blown away with the results. You know, we had a fraction of the people there, and we got 10 times more of the signatures. It's unfortunate because if we had that weekend for the first weekend, we would probably be halfway there already, at least, you know, one third there. More people were home, you know, more people were receptive. So we're taking all this information. We're looking at the, you know, the demographics of the area to concentrate on areas that we can have the most response. We're crafting our message better. So last night I spent a lot of time. I put up the first month, so August 1st till the last day in August, we're going to be doing twice a week during the week from 4 to 9 p.m. so we can get people that are home during the week but not home on the weekends. We're going to be doing every Saturday, and then we're going to be doing alternating Sundays. So
good.
If you can't make it on the weekdays, make it on the weekend. And I'm very confident that we'll get this done much faster than we anticipated. You know, the results have been phenomenal. A lot of people, it just blows my mind. People that, it's crazy. We were knocking on these Democrat door, and they're, you know, we're like, before I even had a chance, I was like, are the Democrats Republicans? And, you know, I was with Judy Spinker, and she's like, oh, they're Democrats. I'm like, oh, man, great. You know, like, sure enough, the wife signed, the husband signed. There was a little pool party in the back with the neighbors. They ended up signing. They were, like, supporting the entire thing. We go to their neighbor's house, who are Republicans, and they were telling us, Sweeney, I can never do anything against him. I won't sign anything. So you don't know.
No, you don't know.
You just don't know.
You have no idea.
You have no idea. And, you know, there was this, like, radically progressive, you know, they were like, oh, Bernie Sanders, this, he's my hero, you know, no drop, you know, food, not bombs, bumper stickers on their car. They got upset that I left my car on with the car door open, you know, not realizing
to let the
that
air out.
Yeah, well, no, because we're knocking, you know, we knocked on 100 and, you know, almost 200 doors that day. So to constantly turn your car on and off, on and off, on and off, it puts more wear and tear, actually wastes more fuel. So finally, it was so comical. It's end of the day. We invested 10 minutes with these people, and they were like annoying. And I just started changing the narrative on them, and I changed the messaging. And I said, listen, all we're doing is giving you and I the option here. We're not going to do anything except give the option to put this man on the ballot again. And so that then you can hear, you know, you can voice your opinion if you do or do not want to support him. And then the guy's like, oh, if that was the case, why don't you just tell me? Give me the, you know, clipboard. And then a wife came from the kitchen and she signed, and it was great. You know, and this is where, like, it's amazing. I'm so proud of the people that are helping because, you know, from the first time around to, you know, seeing the way people are performing now, this is the skill sets that we need to learn on how to knock on doors, cold call, how to craft the proper message, reading people. Like, I read this guy. I'm like, dude, he's never going to sign. You know, but I changed the message up. Yeah. You know, I changed the style. I changed, you know, what we were fighting for. And, you know, this is the kind of things that, like, once we're done with this, like, you'll see. We'll have hundreds of trained soldiers that people are going to be coming to us and begging to get our support, or fearing that we don't go after them next because we have all the political skill sets to get people in or out of office.
And you're using one of the best negotiation gambits by turning around and asking them what's important to them, and then use that as the argument. So now you're just codifying what they're already believing.
Exactly.
Codifying.
Yeah.
That's three words today. Go
Sorry.
Ahead.
So, but this is.
Hey, wait till Dan starts with the legalese.
Yeah. No. This is what I emphasized in the beginning. The NJ2AS, we're not building philosophers here. I don't want to have people coming to our meetings or speakers coming and lecturing. I need to have people coming forward and training.
Yes.
You know, building an army. I want to build soldiers here. And that's exactly what we're doing. You know, the past 3 months has been phenomenal. The people that are coming forward, you know, wanting to train experts in public speaking and politics and door knocking. You know, some of the campaign experts that reached out to us. So I'm very excited what's coming up. I know the past month has been kind of slow. A lot of emails coming in. What's going on? What are we doing? This and that. You know, we've just been building the data. We've been restructuring things. You know, we've been making sure that we're going to have very very, you know, pinnacle and very like precise precision when we come into doing this. And so August forward, we're going to kick butt. You know, I got the new schedule coming up. It's going to be twice a week, you know, Tuesday, Thursdays, then alternating Monday, Wednesdays. Then we're going to be doing every Saturday. We're going to be doing every Sunday, alternating Sundays, so that everybody will have an opportunity to participate and help.
Which is great. And you, when you consider what you did on that first weekend, right after one of the most major storms, there was no power, trees are down in the street, and you were able to collect as many signatures?
Until my data guy called me up, I was panicking. I was like, oh my God, we probably only got 300 signatures. What a waste of time. You know, like, in the, you know, just that negative train of thought calls me up. And then he finally called me up, and I'm not going to give the exact number, but we had multiple thousands of signatures because, you know, all of you guys stepped up and came down and helped. Now, if we did that, we had another weekend, that would have been 10, 15,000 signatures.
Hey, we've been trained up right. We had our first rally in sideways rain at 28 degrees.
Yeah. So no one's going to, yeah, exactly. And this is the story where legends are built from.
Right.
You know, when everything was thrown at us, we still triumphed. We prevailed. 15 hours before the event, you know, where I had paid in full.
They pulled
Dan,
the event,
listen to that. I don't know if you heard. We had the place paid in full. And and reserved for 2 full months, and 15 hours before the event, I posted a location because I didn't want, you know, Sweeney and his little minions to like interfere with maybe pulling a permit or having the police or the fire department interfere. The owner of the Total Turf in Pittman, New Jersey, calls me up and says, "I just heard about what you're doing. We're canceling the event." Now, I have to find an event that's going to hold minimum 500 people.
In,
you know,
15 hours.
In 15 hours. Find the catering, you know, find the beverages and all this. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, imagine, like, well, it's not imagine, but it's crazy that a baker cannot bake a cake for a gay couple and they'll be, like, completely discriminated against. You know, but, you know, we get canceled because of our political principles and it's okay.
For many people, walking into a range the first time, it's quite intimidating. So when you walk in through the double doors, the first thing you'll see on your left is a concierge. When people walk in, they can take a tour of the range, or maybe they're coming in for an appointment with one of my instructors or me, and they'll be directed to the right classroom. It kind of softens the entire experience. It makes people feel more at home. As you walk further into the range, you're going to notice we have New Jersey's only indoor 50-yard range, which is heated and air-conditioned. The dividers at each port are bulletproof. They're extra-wide ports so two people can stand side-by-side and shoot. There's lights in the ports, so you're well-lit. We also have 3 times as much light downrange that the average range would have because I believe it's important that the targets are well-lit. Our target retrieval system is all digital. You program how many feet you want to send it out, and it stays there. Both of our ranges are tactically baffled, which means when we run our higher level courses, you can move forward to the firing line and shoot in any direction, and bullets can't escape. When you come out of the 50-yard range, to your left, you'll see our large classroom, and go back up to the concierge and make a right. We have 2 smaller classrooms. And those classrooms are for small one-on-one classes, our Build-A-Bear, building an AR. As you enter through there, you'll see that we have a portal with a key to go into our Platinum Lounge. They can sit around and watch TV on the leather chairs or couches, and they can maybe work deals with their clients. And you normally don't see a cafe in an indoor range. In New Jersey, we have this archaic law where you're only supposed to go from your house to the range to the house with no unnecessary deviations. I'm seeing a lot more families coming in now where they have multiple kids and the wife will stay in the cafe with 1 or 2 kids and they'll do a handoff. To me, it's very important that people are treated like family, so the bathrooms are very high-end. We used marble and corian and really nice tile and full-length dividers so that people are comfortable when they come in. When you exit the bathroom, you'll see the Gun for Hire radio studio where Sandy and I tape our show. After you pass that and you make a left, you'll notice our retail area. Over 120 firearms for rent. As you turn 180 degrees, you see the large sections of bulletproof glass. That's our 25-yard range. And inside our 25-yard range, we have 13 ports. Those ports are even wider than the 50-yard range. Both ranges have full-time range safety officers. In case you have any questions or concerns, they're there to help you.
Freedom. Oh, for the people.
With with the news, events, and political shenanigans impacting your freedom, you're listening to Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation.
And this segment is brought to you by Montville Executive Suites, MontvilleOffice.com. Located in Montville, New Jersey, Ron Sousa, 38 offices and furnished private meeting rooms with telephone and answering. He has a large room, where a venue can hold up to 70 people in your venue. It's funny, when I go to these coffee places and say I'm pro-gun, I see so many pathetic people there with their laptops and phones running their businesses out of it. For as little as $58 a month, man, you could be at Ron Sousa's place. I mean, come on, people. Really?
Seriously.
MontvilleOffice.com, Montville Executive Suites on Facebook. Another thing I want to talk about is Fundraiser Wrestling was here last Saturday. They sold 100 tickets.
I saw you in your cape.
I put the wrestling mask, the Nacho Libre mask, and cape on. Richie Rotten gave it to me to wear. I took photos. I was holding one of the championship belts. August 29th, Fundraiser Wrestling is going to be in Lodi, New Jersey. And then afterwards, we're going to Blackjack Mulligan's. It's the proceeds are for two police officers, Bill Fearon and a fireman. Excuse me, okay. Ben A. is the fireman. And the money is going to be raised for them full. I bought another 20 tickets and gave them for children, homeless. And also I'm paying for a bus to transport kids from like an orphanage to the wrestling event and back and whatever else is needed. Fundraiserwrestling.com. Tickets are $9.50. Go online, order some August 29th. The next thing is Dan is going to talk about a right to carry case now. But first, October 3rd, down in Cumberland County Community College, we're having the first New Jersey Safe Conference. Similar to like the Second Amendment Foundation does gun rights policy conferences, we're doing a civil rights conference down there where we're going to have Shanine Allen and other speakers. Ainsley Reynolds is going to speak. I'm speaking. Evan Knappen speaking. Scott Bach is speaking. Alexander Rubian will be speaking, or I'm breaking his left elbow. And Dan Schmutter is also going to be speaking there and attending the conference all day. John Willett, by the way, online, 20% of the tickets are sold already. The venue can only hold so many people.
And the date again?
October 3rd, Saturday, October 3rd, from 10 till 6 or 10 to 8 p.m., I believe. And it's an NJ Safe Conference. And let me tell you something. If you're not going to be there, I don't know what to tell you, but the website is njsafecon.net, njsafecon.net. There's also a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. You guys, girls, October 3rd, it's going to be good. It's the first time ever where we're going to have a gathering of civil rights big hitters all in one room and victims of New Jersey's crimes against us, as Evan would say, law-abiding criminals.
Gun rights policy conference.
It's our own gun rights policy conference, first ever in New Jersey. Next year will be held in northern New Jersey, the year after central New Jersey, and it will move accordingly from there. Dan sent me a brief a couple of days ago, said, wait till you see this brief I filed. I read it. It's 38 pages. One thing stuck in my craw. I'm going to lead off with this, and then you guys are going to take it from there. Oddly, this guy applied for a carry permit, a doctor, and it was denied. And Dan will give you the details. But oddly, the court noted that had he had been shot at, he would deserve the carry permit. I'm leaving it there. Dan, intro.
Thanks, Anthony. This is an unusual case.
Because he wasn't shot at, except New Jersey.
Well, it's unusual because it's not your typical challenge. We've filed a petition with the New Jersey Supreme Court, asking them to hear this appeal. And as you know, the New Jersey Supreme Court takes very, very few cases. And so anytime you go to the Supreme Court and ask them to hear something, it's most likely going to be denied because they just don't have the time on their docket to hear most cases. So, you know, it's a long shot in terms of them taking it. But I think we've presented them some interesting issues that they may very well be interested in hearing. This is not a direct challenge to the carry statute. We've seen obviously a number of direct challenges to justifiable need. We saw in federal court the Drake case. We saw the Pantano case that the Supreme Court was going to hear and then decided not to hear. This is a challenge to the way in which the carry law is being implemented, and our two basic arguments are that the training requirement that has been imposed not by the legislature but by the state police is unlawful. That is, it's not permitted by the statute.
It's the training requirement for license for law enforcement officers.
Well,
correct?
That's exactly right.
Though, right?
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be for several reasons. One reason is because the statute doesn't actually authorize that. When a state agency like the state police promulgates regulations, they can only regulate within their authority that's granted by the statute. They're not a legislature. They don't get to make up their own rules. All they can do is implement the statute according to how the legislature intended. And the legislature gives certain authority to the state agency, whether it's the state police, the Department of Environmental Protection, the New Jersey Turnpike Authority. All they're allowed to do is what the statute allows, and they can't exceed that. And when they exceed the statutory authority, it's unlawful and it's invalid. And so when you look at the regulatory scheme for handgun carry, you have two basic groups of people who can carry handguns. You have your exempt persons under two basic groups, and they're exempt from the prohibition and the requirement to get a permit. And they're essentially law enforcement and military. I mean, there's a list of 26 different categories, but they all fit in somewhere as some sort of law enforcement. I mean, you have police officers, sheriff's officers, prison officers, all sorts of different, but they're all basically law enforcement or military. And the legislature provided a very specific training requirement in the statute that they have to satisfy, a requirement that is set forth by the Police Training Commission, the PTC.
PTC.
Right. But then they also provided for carry permits for ordinary citizens. Now, we know that they're very, very difficult to get, and we know that the standard is very high, but it's there. The legislature decided that certain people that aren't law enforcement and military should be entitled to carry guns if they satisfy a certain standard. And significantly, they didn't require this PTC type of training.
It just says knowledgeable use of a handgun, right?
Correct. Essentially, correct.
Go ahead.
Yeah. What the state police did was they decided that they wanted to impose the same type of police training standard on permit applicants as the exempt law enforcement and military individuals. And so they promulgated a regulation that basically brought back in the standard that the legislature specifically left out, the statute. And what we're saying is that that's not lawful.
Correct.
You can't, as a regulatory agency, you can't decide that the statute should be more stringent than what the legislature decided. And we've challenged those kinds of things before. I won a case before the appellate division challenging a regulation by the DEP. And the appellate division struck it down and said, no, you cannot exceed the authority that the statute gives you, and therefore this regulation is invalid. This is really the same thing. This is a situation where the state police have done exactly the same thing. They've decided, we think the statute should be more stringent and more difficult than what the legislature said, and so we're going to impose this. So we're challenging that because the applicant in this case, the case is called In re Racanelli, required that he do that. And in fact, the judge specifically found on the record that he didn't meet the 80% live fire requirement that police are required. And
you got
78%. You got 78.4%. And so the judge felt, well, since he has to meet the same standard as police and he has to be trained like a police officer in terms of the way handguns are handled, therefore he couldn't get his permit. And we think that's unlawful. Now, we also argue that it violates the Second Amendment. And the reason for that, and we're not arguing, a lot of people hear words thrown around like strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, things like that. And all that does is describe the standard that the law has to meet in order to pass constitutional muster. And a lot of courts around the country, including courts in New Jersey, are suggesting that when it comes to carry outside the home, the law only has to meet this intermediate scrutiny standard, that it doesn't have to meet the highest level of scrutiny. We're not arguing one way or the other whether that's true or not. What we're saying is, even if you accept what a lot of these courts are saying, including courts in New Jersey, that a law regulating the carry of handguns outside the home only has to meet the intermediate scrutiny standard, it fails that also. Because to meet intermediate scrutiny, you have to demonstrate that the law is substantially related to an important governmental interest. And what we're arguing is that there's simply no way that requiring ordinary citizens whose only purpose in carrying a handgun is lawful self-defense, there's no way that requiring them to be trained like police officers could possibly meet that standard. Police have a totally different function when they carry handguns.
They have arrest and detainment functions where an individual is just interested in protecting themselves and exercising his right under the Constitution of the United States.
Exactly. I mean, police are required to pursue criminals. They're required to put themselves in danger. ordinary citizens are prohibited from putting themselves in danger. It's not self-defense if you put yourself in danger. And so the functions of the two groups are fundamentally different. Yet to require that you train one the same way you train the other doesn't meet the constitutional test. So our second argument is that even if that's it's valid under the statute, it's unlawful under the Constitution because it does not meet the constitutional requirement.
Now, the thousands of security guards that we qualify here every year, their paperwork says that they have to demonstrate knowledgeable use of a handgun. And there is no set course of fire. And the state police for years have allowed us to shoot. We basically shoot an FBI, 50-round FBI qualification, 7, 10, 15, 25 yards at a Q target, at an FBI official Q target. And we score them 80% or higher. Anybody less than 80%, we fail. And the state police allow that. Then we have armored car companies like Dunbar and Garda. They have their own course of fire designed for working in and around armored cars and close quarter, like going to stores and emptying ATMs. And they've submitted their courses of fire to the state police, and the state police has accepted them. And those are what we use for security. So now to turn around and say an individual citizen has to go to PTC training, so you got to go to a police academy and you got to take a few week course is asinine.
Exactly.
It's asinine.
When exactly what we said. One's on the job, the other's not.
When we come back, we want more on this.
Time and memories. The two most precious things you can give someone. No cell phones, no video games, no electronic devices. No interruptions. Just your favorite gun, a couple boxes of ammo, and time spent together. The folks at Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range believe there's no time like the present, and no present like time. Step through their doors, and you'll feel time stand still. It may look like a luxury shooting range, but what they really sell is the perfect day. And perfect memories are made from perfect days. Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, where family memories begin.
And this segment is brought to you by Philadelphia Firearms Training, a.k.a. PhillyGunTraining.com, PhillyGunTraining.com. Jose Morales is located right in center.
933 Spring Garden
there you
Street
go. That was
in
close.
Philadelphia. I just came from Philadelphia.
Jose is the man. All right. We also talked about the New Jersey SafeCon.net. We also talked about Fundraiser Wrestling. I'm also going to pitch RecallSweeney.com again. Alex at RecallSweeney.com, RecallSweeney.com. And Dan Schmutter is now with the law firm of?
Hartman and Winicky.
Hartman and Winicky, two offices in Bergen County, Ridgewood and Paramus.
Yes.
I got that. All right. Ridgewood and Paramus. Now, listen, this case, this guy is a doctor who was robbed, and they took his credentials, his credit cards, his cell phone, his bag with drugs in it and everything.
Big deal.
He works out of all these hospitals in inner cities, and he fears for his life, and he's had actual stuff pop up. This is a guy, Dr. R here, who's never been in trouble with the law. He's a physician, volunteers his time, travels around the state. Now he feels threatened. Now he wants to get a carry permit. And we're just going to keep throwing roadblocks up because the police chief decides he doesn't want him to carry. And the state police says, you know what, we're going to impose PTC training here. So Dan is fighting this case and appealing this case. What else you got there, Dan? What other jewels of wisdom can you share with our listeners here, especially the ones out of state that cannot believe that we live in a state that makes up the rules as they go along?
Well, here's the other thing about this case that we're arguing, and it's pretty astonishing. Whatever you want to say about the justifiable need standard, and obviously there's a great deal of criticism about the laws we have in New Jersey that preclude ordinary citizens from engaging in lawful self-defense. If you're going to have a standard that requires people to show particularized danger, that is specific danger to them that differentiates them from everybody else, at least when somebody actually does show that, you should give them the permit.
Correct.
And that's what's a little crazy.
No, we just added another roadblock.
Well, exactly. So this isn't
one
of
those. He didn't get hurt bad enough. Well, if he would have got shot, the judge said, then, well, then maybe we would have thought about it.
Or shot at.
Right. Here's the problem. I mean, there is a lot of law out there in New Jersey that says, you know, just because you carry a lot of cash, just because you carry narcotics, you know, to the hospital if you're a physician, just because you're in dangerous neighborhoods, that's not going to do it, right? Lots of people walk around in dangerous neighborhoods. Lots of people carry cash from their businesses. You have to show that you individually have specific danger to you, threats or previous attacks that make you a particular target of violent crime. Okay, fine. So in this case, what does the applicant show on the record? He's able to show that back in 2013, he was chased down the streets of Newark by two armed gang members, okay? And the only way he got them to stop chasing him was he threw them his car keys and he threw them his briefcase. They took his car, that it had his laptop in it. They took the drugs, they took all kinds, and they got all kinds of personal information.
ID, credit cards, office addresses,
his laptop,
everything.
Family pictures, everything.
Prescription pads.
They know everything about this guy. Yeah. And amazingly, and not surprisingly, ever since that incident, he now has guys showing up at his office that don't look like his, you know, typical patients. I mean, he's a plastic surgeon. So when people show up at your office that are not looking for liposuction or a tummy tuck or a facelift, what are they doing there? You know, he has people, you know, lurking around in his parking lot, people calling and hanging up, people wondering when he's going to be, you know, in a particular office at a particular time. All this started after that robbery. So, you know, he's got some serious concerns about whether he's being stalked by these gang members, and he's the only witness to a major felony that they committed. Now, the judge, on the record, found that he was specifically concerned with the doctor's safety. He said it multiple times.
I'm going to quote something here. The law division also noted handguns have limited utility in preventing public attacks because such attacks are sudden and unexpected. But lastly, the law division noted, I'm going to deny the application, but I'm going to deny it without prejudice for two reasons. Something, and I'm hoping it doesn't happen, could happen, which might affect the chief's view, might affect my view. I'm not hoping that something happens to Dr. R. Believe me, I'm not. I mean...
Exactly.
You know, I just lost my appetite.
Whatever you want to say about how New Jersey law works, when the actual judge hearing the case says on the record multiple times, "Boy, I'm really worried about his safety." If you can't get a permit in that kind of situation, if you haven't shown justifiable need, the system is broken, and that's the other argument we're making to the Supreme Court.
Look, and who's running the court then at that point? Is it the chief of the state police, or is it someone above, or is it the judge who's actually supposed to make the determination of it? He's afraid that this guy buys the argument that this is wrong. He buys that the system is broke, but he feels like for whatever reason, that his hands are tied, and he better err on the side of safety, which is the typical marching orders.
Yeah, and the other problem is that there are no reported decisions to guide judges that show the granting of a permit. All the reported decisions
are against.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So all the appellate division decisions, all the Supreme Court decisions are the denials of permits.
Right.
So really, this case is the perfect vehicle for the Supreme Court to demonstrate what a grant should look like.
Because nobody below wants to be the first one.
Exactly.
And think about the liability issue. You can actually charge a bar or a bartender for allowing someone to become overintoxicated and drinking because you knowingly knew that person was going to be a threat. Now, would this judge be liable because he knew this doctor has severe threats to his life? And if this doctor were to be attacked and killed by these gang members?
I'm guessing he would be exempt, right?
Yeah, he wouldn't be liable, and that's why erring on the side of denial.
I'm being very facetious here.
Exactly.
Like, but this judge is saying, I know you're going to be killed. I know you have a high risk to your life.
Sucks to
be
you.
But I'm still going to deny you, you know, your right to self-defense.
Yeah, right.
And that's why it would be very helpful for all the courts in New Jersey to have a Supreme Court decision in which the court says, okay, you can grant permits, and here's an example of where you can and should grant permits. Because there is no such decision that judges can go by and follow and feel confident that they're following the law.
Isn't
there a decision already been made? It was made in 17 in the 1700s.
Here's a decision you can
1776.
New Jersey.
Here's a decision they can shove up their ass. I lived in Newark. The reason why I'm here today as an activist is because I was walking home and this man got murdered 20 feet behind me. You know, I've been approached by gangs of 15, 20 people, you know, with guns, with bats, with bars, whatever you name it, threatening my life. You know, just tell this judge to go walk the streets of Newark without his armed guards, without his probably concealed carry permit, and see how safe he feels. You know, if they really believed in the strength of their own conviction, why don't they live the lives of everybody else that is defenseless and live in fear every day?
The problem is you're trying to get into the mind of a progressive. The progressive's mindset is very simple. It's okay for you.
Yeah, you good know. For thee, but not for me.
Yes,
exactly. I mean Michael Gatskill. We're releasing the video. The judge. It was actually hilarious. The prosecutor says, "Your Honor, you're the only person that I know that has a concealed carry permit." Right. So now we know this judge has a gun. He goes, and then the judge goes, "Well, Michael, what's your justifiable need? Have you been attacked? Have you been robbed? Have you been this? Have you been that?" And Michael's like, "No, but that's the whole point. Why do I have to be attacked first before I can apply
have
for
Have you,
right?
judge, been attacked
exactly.
and robbed?
I want to see what this judge's justifiable need was.
Yeah, what was your justifiable need other than the fact that you're boinking the Superior Court judge?
Yeah. I mean, this is how ridiculous it is. I mean, when I was in Newark and I was at a bank,
so
all the judges
term,
there.
Dan, boinking.
My office is in downtown. Boinking. I heard that word.
Dan is now
like
leaving the studio because he cannot be associated with this discussion.
No, but I mean, my office is in downtown Newark. You know, my bank, I go. Every time I go there and I see the, you know, the judges,
dude,
they have armed guards.
Banks.
No, they have armed guards.
Of course they do.
Like, how ridiculous is that?
Of course they do.
They don't, you know, it's exactly like you said. It's good for thee, but not for me. And, you know, it just Dan, you just really pissed me off with this nice with this
poor,
story.
Poor
and
guy.
I don't mean that Dan personally, but hearing this bullshit, which is exactly what it is, it just makes me want to get more furious and put more action into Recall Sweeney and get these people out. It but is so corrupt. It's so corrupt.
Dude, you really need some, like, emotion or some passion with what you do. you really got to muster some sort of thing. All right. Well,
I'm
when
sorry,
we come
go
back,
on
we're
going
to talk more about this. And we're going to give Alexander a chance to lower
yeah,
his blood
hear,
pressure.
I want to hear more of Dan's facts on his case.
Yeah, this is crazy, Dan. This is the kind of... I'm hoping you're saying, like, you're fucking with us. Like...
to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise. And although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250 pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing. Which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Are we back? All right, real quick, couple letters. Tom Viso wanted to thank everybody that bought all the tickets for fundraisingwrestling.com. He's also on the wrestling team. Gene Rossi also sent a letter. He took the prepping class with James Hedham last week, and he can't believe how much he learned. He wanted to thank us for that. I got a bunch of other letters I'm going to save, but I got one from this gentleman here, Eric Santiago. Dan, this gentleman lives in Newark, and he's taken a few classes, and he spoke to me. He mentioned he had a hard time getting his FID. The Newark Police Department, he submitted his paperwork December 22nd, and of 2014. His fingerprints were done December 30th, 2014, and still no news from NORC. They told him it takes about a year. Now, Dan, you've been helping out with Operation Strike Force, correct?
Yeah, I'm handling the work for the ANGRPC, permitting Strike Force. That's something that we've been seeing a lot. As you know, Anthony, phase one was collecting as much information as we possibly could from members and non-members about permitting issues, dealing with delays, additional forms, additional requirements, a variety of problems that people are having with the process. Right now, we're involved in phase two. Now, we're still collecting information, by the way. So, I mean, if anybody has complaints about their municipality in connection with permitting, they should email strikeforce@anjrpc.org. And, you know, because, I mean, it doesn't end. Just because we've moved on to
you
phase two.
You hear that, Eric?
Yeah, just because we've moved on to phase two doesn't mean we still don't want to hear what's happening out there. Because we can continue sending letters and we can continue engaging the municipalities.
And we've gotten a lot of municipalities in line, but we know there's going to be a few big cities that we're going to end up in the courts with.
That's right. I mean, we've already engaged about 150, and we have more to go. We have another 40 or 50 that we have to get, contact. And right now, we're sort of dealing directly with the municipalities. We're talking to them. A lot of them are coming in line because they understand that they have to do things the right way. And once we point that out to them, most of them want to comply.
Because a lot of them didn't realize what they were doing was wrong, right?
Some of them just don't realize what the law is. And once you point it out to them, they say, okay, fine, we'll stop doing that, or we'll do it this way, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some of them are more difficult, and one of the things we're working towards is identifying the particularly difficult municipalities that we're going to have to deal with more aggressively, and so that's one of the keys to phase two. But absolutely, people should send in their information to strikeforce@anjrpc.org, because we still need the information. We haven't, just because we've moved forward with the project, that doesn't mean we're not interested in hearing the story.
I wanted to answer that question. Now, Dan, going back to Dr. R's carry permit case, when you're in the court arguing this, do you just want to rip all your clothes off and scream and throw feces at the walls or something? Tell the truth. How frustrated do you get? How frustrated do you get?
It's going to be burned in the back of my brain.
You have to think about it objectively and logically. You really do. Judges are people, and they perceive people, and they can see if you really kind of understand and feel what you're talking about, and whether what you're doing, what you're saying, makes sense. So you really do have to kind of, take a step back and present it sensibly, logically, and in a way that's appealing to someone's intelligence.
But now, a lot of the judges...
I guess that would be a no answer.
Yeah, that would be a no. Yeah. A lot of judges, let's put it this way, we're all in our own nucleus, because we've all introduced people to gun rights and stuff and enlightened and awakened people, because they don't realize how our rights are trampled on compared to other states. So imagine a judge, a New Jersey State Superior Court judge, who's not versed, that realizes 45 other states issue carry permits if you just have a pulse, and you're not a felon.
So, like the Constitution demands?
Correct. Oh. So you must feel that frustration, knowing that there's a free world going on out there where people are exercising these constitutional and God-given rights, and here you are clawing away for this doctor, law-abiding citizen, for one person out of 8.8 million in New Jersey. You're breaking your back trying to get this guy the rights that should be given to him automatically. Doesn't it really kill you sometimes?
Well, it's a strong motivator. It really is. But, you raise an interesting point, Anthony, by the way. You hit on something that's absolutely critical to understand, and that is that in New Jersey, people have been educated and inculcated in a certain way of thinking.
Another big word.
That is different than how people outside the state understand about firearms. So, for example, one of the arguments we've made in the case is that it is actually law. It's not really law in the sense that it's a rule of law, but the cases that govern the granting or denial of carry permits say that, generally speaking, permits are not that, carrying a handgun on the street is not that useful, which we all know to be false, that it's generally dangerous and hazardous for ordinary citizens to be carrying firearms on the street, which we also know to be false.
Based on every other state that has allowed it for so many years.
Correct. And this concept goes back to, 1966, when the statute was passed in this way, and to 1971, when a New Jersey Supreme Court decision said so. And every time these cases come up, they keep quoting that case, and they keep quoting. And this trial judge did the same thing. He cited in his decision this concept that a handgun really wouldn't have helped him that much anyway on the street. And one of the arguments we've made to the Supreme Court, asking them to review this, is the idea that, you know, 45 years of experience since that time has told us that both of those things are false, that it is not dangerous generally for law-abiding citizens to carry handguns on the street, and that handguns are extremely effective in self-defense. And we now know this after years and years and years of experience in all the other states in the country.
If handguns weren't effective to stop a violent attack on the street, why the hell, when you call a police department saying I'm being attacked, do they send a man in a uniform carrying a gun?
Right.
Why do they do that then?
Exactly.
It's
Twilight Zone.
And in fact, we've argued to the Supreme Court that it's contrary to the very basis of the Heller and McDonald decisions,
exactly.
which themselves found very specifically as a fundamental aspect of the decision that handguns are useful for self-defense and are the favorite tool for self-defense. So it's actually really violates the Second Amendment and the Heller and McDonald decisions for New Jersey courts to hold otherwise. Secondly, we're arguing that it violates the intent of the legislature because the legislature, in enacting 2C58-4, which is the statute that allows the granting of permits to carry, in enacting that statute, the legislature had to necessarily have found that handgun permits can be useful. And so why would you ever have a provision in the law that allows the granting of permits if they weren't useful for self-defense? And so in that way, the courts are also going against the intent of the legislature in enacting the statute. So that's the fourth issue that we've asked the Supreme Court of New Jersey to hear and consider. Fundamentally, we think this case is about fixing the regulatory scheme within the intent of the legislature. We're not challenging what the legislature did. What we're saying is that the way the handgun carry scheme works in New Jersey is fundamentally different than what the legislature actually provided for. And the Supreme Court is in a position to fix how it works and bring it back in line with the way the statute provides.
That's a good strategy.
Which might open the door for one or two people out of 8.8 million to actually get a carry permit.
Right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So,
but it's a step in the direction of now we address the entire process.
And you know what
really
pisses me off? I know at least 50 people politically connected, Morris, Bergen, Essex County, that have carry permits.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That come in and qualify with me once a year.
They are politically connected.
And don't get me wrong. They go into Newark. They own buildings. They own houses. They have real estate.
But
they're developers or whatever.
Why are their lives more important than my life, my wife's life, the lives of our family, our children? Why are their lives, because they made a political contribution?
What's this doc pay a year in taxes? What does he contribute to the criminal system? Nothing. He had because somebody punched a mirror drunk, and he's a plastic surgeon, and he was called in to do the stitches, and now he's got to worry about getting robbed. He's not going to want to go.
Right.
Okay?
No, he's just going to stop going. He's going to stop his pro bono work.
Right. Hopefully it's not one of the Supreme Court judges' children that needs the plastic surgeon.
Oh, dude, they would not be in Columbus Hospital.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying. Well, you never know, right? You just never know where somebody gets ambulanced in.
Well, they'll medevac them out.
Yeah. You just never know. But karma can be a bitch sometimes.
Yes, it can.
I want to thank Dan Schmutter. Dan, you're welcome to be on the show anytime. What is your law firm?
Hartman and Winicky in Ridgewood and Paramus.
The beautiful thing. We have Alexander still hanging. I told you to leave segments ago. Tell us how to contact what people can do. Do it now.
Just contact me, Alex, at recallsweeney.com. Go to recallsweeney.com. Sign up so you can get the emails, you get the updates. We're going to be putting out a lot of information for the next week.
Send a few bucks. I mean,
And send donations. We need that money.
Okay.
Sweeney has $1 million in his campaign fund that we're going to have to fight against.
Okay. After the badge, August 25th, if you're a retired cop or thinking about retiring and a member of the range, Jan Gilhooly, retired Secret Service agent. If you go on the website, you see him walking behind Ronald Reagan.
Nice.
Protective on his detail. Jan will be teaching after the badge here August 25th. Evan Knappen will be here October 16th for his gun law seminar. Wilderness First Aid is rescheduled to August 8th and 9th, two-day class. CPR First Aid and AED, August 15th. Basic First Aid, August 15th. And Quick Clot, August 19th at WPR Range right here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you both for being on the show. Dan, thank you for fighting the good fight. Alexander, keep doing what you do.
Thank you, brother.
You got some set for a guy that doesn't eat red meat. I will tell you that.
Go ahead. No meat.
Drinking it. Jamba Juice. Well, you've done it again. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gunfire Hour Radio. Gunfire Hour Radio is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, and the Licensed Broadcast Music Incorporated. I'm Sandy Barani. On behalf of my co-host, Master Trainer Anthony Colangelo, Dan Schmutter, thank you so much for coming in. Alexander, you're always welcome, even though you're a vegan. And Winston's putting his 2 cents in. We love you guys. See you next week.
Yeah. Let's see.